mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, Findlay Mayor Christina Mern joins us to discuss progress in designing and planning the downtown recreation area project. It's an effort that continues to generate strong reaction both from those in support and those opposed. Also this morning, for all your favorite summertime outdoor activities, proper nutrition to help you fuel up, keep going, and recover afterward. And it doesn't get any better than taking in a baseball game on a beautiful summer day. The Flag City Sluggers will open their inaugural season this weekend. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, June 5th, 2025. Ohioans could soon be the latest state to implement a flat income tax. There is an amendment to the state's two-year budget bill proposed by the Senate that would see the income tax rate drop to 2.5% for everyone. Should say everyone earning at least $26,000 a year. If you earn under $26,000, you currently pay 0% income tax, and that would stay the same. But for everyone else, it would go to 2.5% across the board. Ohio, if it passes, would become the 15th state with a flat income tax. The argument for the flat income tax is that other states which have done this have seen greater economic growth than has Ohio. The argument against is that it basically lowers the rate for high earners and leaves the rate the same for those that make less money. So it doesn't provide a whole lot of relief to those who most need it. The theory being that if you make $1 million a year, you can more afford, say, a slightly higher income tax of 3.5% instead of 2.5%. It's not as big of a burden as it is for those on the lower end of the spectrum. But we'll see what happens. And tomorrow morning, by the way, tomorrow morning on the program, State Senator Rob McCauley is going to be with us, and we'll talk about the process of putting together their version of the state budget. So we'll ask about that. And whether he thinks that is something that will make it into the final version of the bill. They're still working on it. By the way, speaking of high income earners, according to the latest World Health Report, the number of millionaires in the United States grew by 7.6% in 2024. There are, let's see here, there are 562,000 more millionaires than the prior year, a 7.6% increase in the number of millionaires in the U.S. Globally, the millionaire population rose by 2.6%. So we are outpacing the rest of the world in making people wealthy. They say 23.4 million millionaires worldwide, and nearly 8 million of those reside in the U.S. So basically, one in three millionaires in the world is American, or at least lives in America. India and Japan saw gains in the number of millionaires. Interestingly, among the places that experienced declines in the number of millionaires, Europe, Brazil, Mexico, and the Middle East. The Middle East surprised me because you think, you know, oil and all of that. But, a decline in the number of millionaires. The report also projected that 84% of high net worth individuals will inherit wealth sometime between now and the year 2040. So in the next 15 years. Additionally, the number of ultra-high net worth individuals, those with at least $30 million in liquid assets, increased by 6.2%, driven by strong stock market performance, particularly in the sector of artificial intelligence. So, there you go. We're getting richer. We're getting richer in this country, anyway, and outpacing the wealth being generated in the rest of the world. USA, USA, USA. Are you traveling this summer? We've had a number of travel-related stories. This is the big time of year for it. The FAA is predicting over 50,000 flights per day this summer. That's an amazing statistic. 50,000 flights per day is what the FAA says we will see. That's a 4% increase in the number of summer flights compared to last year. Schedules are 4% busier. United Airlines is projecting a record-breaking summer with about 50 million passengers between June and August on their planes. That'd be about 3 million more than last year. American Airlines says nearly 5 flights will depart every minute this summer. 5 flights a minute taking off at airports around the country. And they forecast the busiest day, the busiest travel day, will be Sunday, July 6th. So the Sunday after 4th of July. That's the biggest travel day. They have nearly 6,800 flights scheduled that day alone. Expedia said some of the busiest travel days are expected to be Thursday, June 19th, Friday, June 27th, Tuesday, August 5th, and Tuesday, August 26th. I have not looked at the calendar to see why those particular dates, they say, are going to be the busiest, but those, they say, are the busiest travel days this summer. And the cheapest days to fly domestically this summer will be Tuesday, August 19th, and Monday, August 25th. They say there will be a drop in demand as summer travel begins to wrap up late in August, mid to late August. So those are going to be the best days to fly, the cheapest days to fly. I don't know about the best. Those are the cheapest days to fly. And if you are not flying, we have good news for you as well. Those taking road trips, according to Hopper, car rental prices are remaining steady last year, averaging $47 a day. So those are the numbers for those who are traveling this year. By the way, if your summer vacation includes a trip to Cedar Point, you might want to hold off until on or after June 28th. That is the debut day for their new Siren's Curse roller coaster. They announced that yesterday. At a height of 160 feet, a length of almost 3,000 feet, and a speed of 58 miles an hour, Siren's Curse will be the tallest, longest, and fastest tilt coaster in North America. And will begin thrilling the public on June 28th. So that is the day that it will finally debut. June 28th. Actually, you know, here's the thing. And I would love to ride the new coaster, but you know that the lines are going to be astronomically long. So I'm thinking June 28th, right around that, would be a great time to visit Cedar Point to ride all the other coasters, because everybody is going to be in line. All of the coaster maniacs are going to be in line for the new one. And so that might result in shorter lines for all of the rest of them. So something to think about there. And lastly, here among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, a little motivation for you here this morning. A teenager in Montana has made history becoming the youngest female to climb the highest mountain on every continent. Emma Schwerin completed the achievement, which is known as the Seven Summits. It's sort of like the Grand Slam of mountain climbers, to climb the highest peak on every continent. The Seven Summits. She completed the achievement on May 15th after reaching the summit of Mount Everest. By the way, she is 17 years, 2 months, and 24 days old when she reached the summit of Mount Everest. In doing so, she became the youngest American woman to summit Mount Everest and the youngest in history to climb the highest mountain on all 7 continents. That's pretty impressive. 17 years old, and she's already climbed the tallest mountains on every continent on Earth. So certainly, you can roll out of bed get in the shower, get dressed, and go to work today. That is all we are asking of you. Not to climb the highest mountain on every continent on Earth. All you have to do is roll out of bed and go to work today. If a 17-year-old can do that, certainly you can make it to work on time. So up and at 'em, there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Showers and storms possible today, a high in the middle 70s. Showers and storms possible tonight, a low in the mid 60s. The Ohio State Highway Patrol is asking all motorists to do their part in promoting roadway safety during what's referred to by safety officials as the 100 deadliest days of summer. The time period from Memorial Day through Labor Day, which sees an increase in traffic on the roadways and an increased number of both serious injury and fatal crashes. During this time period last year, more than 65,000 crashes occurred on Ohio roadways, resulting in 393 deaths. Last year, during the 100 deadliest days of summer, troopers in Ohio made more than 4,200 OVI arrests and cited more than 7,800 motorists for driving with a suspended license. And just like last summer, troopers will be highly visible on roadways across the state, promoting traffic safety for those who live and travel through Ohio. Faculty at Youngstown State University are collecting signatures to put a referendum on the ballot that would overturn Senate Bill 1.
Besides banning DEI programs, the new law also prohibits faculty from going on strike, requires every Ohio college student to take a 3-hour civics education course, and imposes dozens of other programmatic and administrative changes. Schools that violate the law would risk losing state funding. To get on the ballot, the group needs about 248,000 signatures, and they must come from at least half of Ohio's counties.
WTOL 11's Tim Miller reporting. Marathon Center for the Performing Arts is hoping you can join them as they kick off the summer with a much-loved event and staple in the Findlay community since the early 90s, Boogie on the Block. Findlay's biggest block party will take place on Friday from 5 to 10 in the MCPA parking lot. MCPA says Boogie offers the perfect opportunity for friends, families, and neighbors to come together before their busy summer schedules begin, and partygoers are in for a night of great food, music, and fun. Get more details in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Now, our cover story this morning, earlier this week, Findlay Mayor Christina Mern gave an update on progress in designing and planning the downtown recreation area project, which continues to generate strong reaction from both proponents and detractors. And Mayor Christina Mern is with us this morning in the studio. Where exactly are we on this project right now?
We just completed the 30% design phase.
Okay.
And so we are now, I'm going to be going to council to request the remaining funding to get to the 100% designs and engineering, to then be able to continue to, and during that period, also be able to start fundraising, looking for state and federal grant as well as private grant opportunities, because this project still is not going to be able to break ground until at least 27, if not 2028. Because of all of the benching work that needs to occur before we would be able to start any other amenities.
So how do you plan and design a recreation area when you don't actually know what the budget will be? I mean, again, we've heard all kinds of different estimates of what this could cost, and we've talked about this and before. A lot of it will depend on the funding that's available, but it could be anything from $40 million to $4 million. How do you design for such a wide range when you don't know exactly what the budget is going to be?
Well, I guess I would look at it the other way, is we need to understand the cost of all of the components to determine then what we prioritize. And then also be able to fundraise, because there may be a component that's lower on our list that somebody really wants to pay for and is willing to donate to support. So really, we need to have the design and the schematics before we can determine, okay, what are we now willing to invest into this area? And there are aspects of it that, you know, we could phase out and do later point in time. But there's other portions that we have to do if we're going to do them at the beginning of the project because of the letter of map revision that we will submit to FEMA once the flood projects are completed to be able to remove parcels from the floodplain. So there's a lot of moving pieces on that this project. We've been working on it already, you know, for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Big projects take a lot of time and a lot of energy. And in some cases, you know, a lot of money.
And especially projects that have so many other things attached to it. This is not like just taking a parcel and putting a park on it. There are a lot of contingencies here because of the flooding issue.
Correct. Yeah. So the area, you know, it's 19 acres of property. And I think, folks, it's when you drive past it, you don't really realize how significant an area it is. Mm-hmm. The benching then will, the area along the river will be dropped by about 8 feet. And then it's going to tier up. So those lower levels will, you know, flood a little more often. So we've designed portions of them kind of around the multi-purpose stage that is proposed. Then there's areas that are meadows. And there's over 300 trees that are planned to go into this area. Mm-hmm. You know, over 3 miles of walking paths, the skate park, a splash pad, all of these different components that even, you know, I hear people say, well, just make it nice walking paths. Well, concrete's expensive too. You know, walking paths and the engineering that goes with those and lights alone are going to be $2 million.
Yeah. So that's really most of the concern centers around the amount of money. And as you mentioned, the idea is private fundraising, grant money. But how much skin in the game is the city going to have?
So my goal is that the city of Findlay doesn't put more than $10 million of kind of the local dollars into it.
How do you get to that number?
Yeah, so I figure. So right now, when I look at the budget, the estimate of the $34 million that is out there right now includes 20% contingency costs, a nearly 9% escalation to 2027 construction. Mm-hmm. And so we have some wiggle room. And as you go through, once you get more detailed designs, you can do value engineering. So we can kind of continue to refine that. And so the city of Findlay, my desire is that over the next couple of years, we set aside money. And then, you know, $10 million is very achievable, in my opinion, from being able to set that aside and hopefully be able to contribute that portion.
Just to clarify, when you say $10 million, is that for the entire project? Because the planning and the design phase is going to take a big chunk of that.
Nope. That would be over and above the design.
Okay. So $10 million for the actual park itself. And the other question that has come up, because we've removed buildings from this area, and what about remediation? Are there remediation concerns with whatever might be in the ground that exists now?
Yeah. So as you guys know, we completed the Rainick property remediation, which was the most concerning area. We were able to do that with a brownfield grant. Mm-hmm. And this work was going to be completed as the benching regardless. When you're completing work, especially that's utilizing state or federal dollars, you have to clean it to the standards set out for what the end use is going to be. So when we finish the benching, it will have to be at a parks and open space standard. Right now,
regardless, again, just to clarify, regardless of what else we do with it, because it's going to be green space regardless.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. So regardless of if we put any amenities, if it's just a field of grass, it is going to have to be the parks and open space environmental cleanup standard. Mm-hmm. What we are talking about right now is the commissioners also applied for and received another brownfield grant through the state of Ohio to just clean up some of the arsenic and high mercury spots that were identified. Again, that grant is only having to clean it to a commercial high child exposure standard, which is the same standard that is utilized for schools and daycares. I know there's been some discussion about, well, why aren't we cleaning it to a residential standard? Well, a residential standard requires 10 feet of clean soil below the remediation area. Mm-hmm. And that is really only necessary because of basements. You know, if you're hanging out in the basement, you don't want something kind of coming through. But we're cleaning so much dirt out of this area as part of the benching, meeting the high exposure standards, and then that parks and rec standard, park and open space standard. So we are making sure that it is a clean environment. Nobody takes that responsibility lightly. We also just don't think it's necessary to clean to a standard that doesn't apply to that area.
So obviously, in hearing you talk about all of these different components that go into this, we reference timeline, kind of lay this out from where we are now to breaking ground for the actual park or getting it to a point where it'll be usable, because I'm guessing that this is the other part of this plan is that maybe doing some of it at in stages.
Potentially. I'm not a big proponent of that, just because two main things. One, when you mobilize crews multiple times, you lose some of the cost efficiencies.
Fair enough.
And two, again, going back to that letter of map revision, we have to, right now, all of the models that have been done include the amenities that we have put. If we end up submitting it and it does not include that, they base their approval off of what is done at that point in time. And so if we don't do a component and we submit it, we're really not going to be able to go back and add it in the future. Mm. So the timeline is, right now we are really on the goal line with the flood mitigation projects. We have the FEMA grant that has been approved and is currently in the 30-day public comment period. And we expect then to have that signed in the next couple of months. Hopefully with the basin, the Norfolk Southern, and the Phase 2 benching, those will go out to bid and then be break ground later this fall. You know, I'm shooting for October. We'll see if we can hit that timeline. But break ground on those take 12 to 18 months to complete. So that puts us through 26. We most likely would be able to then start on some of the recreation amenities in 2027. And I would expect that, I don't have a specific construction timeline, but I would expect that that would take a year at least as well.
So the plans and finalizing the plans and the fundraising will all have to be done by that time. By that time you break ground in 2027.
Yep. And I've been having some preliminary conversations with key partners that may be interested in donating. So we definitely have interest. But obviously it was difficult to have those conversations without releasing information that wasn't available yet.
Yeah. And to that end, again, not to jump too far ahead, but you say you've had conversations with those who might be interested in having a stake in investment. Any commitments at this point?
No.
Okay.
Nope. I have not asked for hard dollars at this point in time. I've really just been sharing the vision.
Because we don't
have
a plan.
Correct. Yeah. So we needed to get to this point to be able to say, here is ballpark figures. What are you interested in, a component? Is there a dollar amount? We could do multi-year gifts. So we have a lot of options.
All right. Again, Findlay Mayor Christina Mern with us this morning, talking about the progress in designing and planning this downtown recreation area project. And we have a link on our webpage for more information about what some of those preliminary plans look like. Is this going to be something that the closer we get, the more formal forums for feedback we will have? I know, you know, you've often said, hey, reach out, give the mayor's office a call, send a note, you know, what have you. But will there be more formal forums for people to ask questions, share feedback?
So we're looking at a couple different things. Obviously, right now there's the survey to give initial feedback. Once we get more into the kind of refined designs. Mm-hmm. Obviously, council meetings, folks can always come and share feedback. And then we are also going to be collecting questions and doing updated FAQs on our website. And then we may look at doing kind of a town hall meeting, but probably not for a couple of months. We'll have to just kind of see how the process moves.
All right. We will continue to follow it as well. The link is on our webpage at goodmornings.net. And Findlay Mayor Christina Mern, thanks very much for the time.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Well, remember we were talking yesterday about getting out, getting active, getting healthy this summer. Did you know that pickleball is the country's fastest growing sport? Well, that may not be a big surprise necessarily, but check this out. It has increased 311% in popularity over just the last 3 years and is part of an industry that is now worth more than $1.3 billion. This addictive hybrid of tennis and ping pong, now played on nearly 68,500 courts across the U.S. And like any athletic activity, fueling your body is key to success both on and off the court. So sports dietitian and nutritionist Dawn Jackson-Blattner is with us this morning. Dawn, I am not a player myself, so help me out here. What is making pickleball this huge phenomenon that we have seen in recent years?
Oh my gosh, it is a phenomenon. I didn't know about it. I was like, I don't know. I guess I'll try it. Everybody's talking about it. I tried it. I get it. Okay. Here's the deal. It's pretty easy to pick up. You don't have a lot of equipment, and it's so social. That's my favorite part of it. You know, I went with friends. We made more friends on the course. And when you look around, it's so cool because you really don't have to be an elite athlete to play. It could be any age you see on the course. And so I think that's the fun part. It's social, but and anyone can really try it and love it.
Now, obviously, pickleball is not as athletically intense as is tennis, certainly less intense than many other sports, but we still need to fuel up with proper nutrition before, during, and after the match.
Yes. Hey, thanks for bringing this up, because this is really my expertise, my specialty. I'm a sports nutritionist. So whatever activity you're doing, even if you're a total novice, whatever, when you're eating the right stuff before, during, and after, it can make such a huge difference in how you feel. You can feel so much more energized. You can feel less soreness. It's so important. So when you think about nutrition before you're being active, whether it be pickleball or anything, you're looking at beforehand wanting to have some smart carbs like fruit, oats, whole grain crackers, something like that, for energy. Okay. And then during your activity, you want to stay hydrated. You can do that with water. I also make a DIY sports drink that's orange juice, water, and a pinch of salt to replace the electrolytes that you lose in sweat.
Okay.
And then after you're active, you really need to thank your body for being so good to you. And you do that by a lot of protein, but also a balanced meal. So it's not just like how much protein can you have, it's protein plus all the balance. So that sports nutrition overall is thinking about that before, during, and after.
Kind of in a nutshell there. What about during? And you mentioned hydration, but are snacks a good thing? I mean, should we be munching, you know, in between games or, you know, during an activity?
Oh, my goodness. So, yes, the deal is that with the right snack, you get better fuel, and you can focus more, you have more energy. And so what's so cool is that I have created two recipes, particularly for pickleball players, but it could be for anybody who's active. One is protein cookie bites. And even though that sounds like, what, a cookie? These are a special recipe that actually has this perfect ratio of carbs to protein to help fuel your pickleball game. So you can have those beforehand or even during, like you said, between games or matches. And then after, I created a crispy quinoa omelet recipe, which is a super balanced meal that is less than 10 minutes to make, and I absolutely love it. And both of those recipes are extra special because I use Eggland's Best eggs in there, which have 6 times more vitamin D, 25% less saturated fat, and more than double the omega-3 and B12 compared to ordinary eggs. So those are nutrients that we all need, but especially when we're being active.
And you mentioned Eggland's Best, significant, because I understand that there is a contest that is taking place right now that will help us level up our fitness goals.
Okay, so this is so fun. Eggland's Best just signed up as the official sponsor of Lifetime Pickleball. So as part of all the fun, Eggland's Best is running what they're calling, I love this name, it's called the Pickleball Power-Up Sweepstakes. And here are the deets, okay? Now through July 15th, fans can enter daily at ebfamilysweeps.com. There's no purchase necessary, and there's a chance to win some awesome prizes. Like, for example, the grand prize is $5,000 plus exclusive Lifetime Pickleball gear, EB merch, a 3-month supply of Eggland's Best eggs. So great grand prize, but there's also weekly prizes available too, like grocery gift cards and other kinds of swag. So this is really something not to miss.
And where do we get details on the contest and participate, sign up and participate for this?
Yeah, okay, so thank you. The protein cookie bites that I created and the crispy quinoa omelet, those two recipes and all the sweepstakes information is all at ebfamilysweeps.com.
Okay, all right, very good. So just kind of recap, again, let's talk about the process for, you know, before the activity, during the activity, after the activity. What should we be focusing on nutritionally to help us be at our best?
Yes. Okay. So this makes a big difference. Now, let me give you an example with the actual recipe. So like beforehand, you would grab a couple of those protein cookie bites. They're going to give you carbs for energy and a little bit of protein for staying power.
Oh, okay.
Then during, really thinking about hydration, and that could be water or all, maybe like this sports drink I was talking about where it's orange juice, water with a pinch of salt.
Okay.
And then after, your body really needs a balanced meal. And so that's where that crispy quinoa omelet could come in. It's got 20 grams of carbs, 20 grams of protein, and all in under 10 minutes. So that is like perfection. And that would be like a perfect example of a pickleball before, during, and after.
There you go. And by the way, as we were mentioning, you kind of touched on this, and I think it's important to point out, even though we're referencing pickleball, one of the hottest trends right now, among the fastest growing activities, but all of this applies really for any sort of exercise or activity that gets you going.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Like, it could be biking, roller skating, walking. I mean, anything that you are doing that's active, if you pair it with good nutrition, you're going to feel so much better.
All right. And again, sports dietitian and nutritionist Dawn Jackson-Blattner with us this morning. Dawn, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Happy summer. Happy pickleballing.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
I happened to see this video online. It has gone viral. If you have not seen it yet, it is pretty amazing. A wild elephant caused some mild chaos at a grocery store in Thailand recently when it entered from a nearby national park and helped itself to some snacks. The video of this elephant is walking into the convenience store and checking everything out while the owners of the store are right there. I mean, this is a wild elephant, and the owners are right there trying to shoo it out. The male elephant captured on video calmly snatching and eating food from the shelves. Despite attempts by shop workers to shoo him away, the elephant continued to enjoy his impromptu snack time. The owner of the shop says the elephant consumed 9 bags of sweet rice crackers, a sandwich, and some dried bananas before leaving without causing any harm. That was the other part of this. Clearly, this is not the first time this elephant has visited a convenience store, either this one or some other convenience store, because he knew exactly, this elephant knew exactly what he was doing. Walks in, he gets his snack, and then he backs out without even knocking over any of the shelves and is on his merry way. It's a pretty amazing video if you haven't seen it. But just not something that you would expect to see an elephant walking in the store, you know? Elsewhere in the broken news, speaking of animals, researchers have uncovered a massive seahorse smuggling operation. That's right. Smuggling seahorses, of all things. Apparently, this is a smuggling operation spanning 62 countries that is worth over $21 million, the illegal seahorse market. $21 million worth of seahorses. Despite international bans on the seahorse trade, nearly 5 million seahorses were trafficked through this sophisticated network. Most seizures occurred at airports, but the largest hauls came from sea cargo facilities, which makes sense. You know, they're seahorses. I don't know how you would even take a seahorse on a plane. What? It's weird. But they have found them in airports as well. The study that has just been released highlights the interconnected nature of wildlife trafficking networks, with seahorses often smuggled alongside other endangered species. Without enhanced enforcement, they say, seahorse populations face extinction due to rampant illegal trade. I had no idea. Seahorses, but I just boggles my mind that there are seahorse smugglers, of all things. Somebody comes up to you on the street, want to buy a seahorse? Yeah. What about those sea monkeys that were advertised in the comic books when we were kids? Are those, I mean, now I'm questioning everything. Let's see. A couple of other items here in the broken news, the odd and unusual side of the headlines. Also from the international file here, the German city of Cologne was forced this week to order its largest evacuation since World War II when they discovered three unexploded bombs in the village, in the city. Three unexploded bombs. They were apparently American bombs dating back to World War II and had to be defused. The weapons were discovered on Monday, but experts were unable to go to work to defuse them until more than 20,000 people were evacuated. Largest evacuation in Germany since World War II. Bomb squad technicians did successfully complete the operation yesterday with no reports of any injuries. So, it's good news. Wow. Biggest evacuation since World War II. back stateside here, a couple of items. From the Golden State, California high school sophomore Clara Adams won the 400-meter race at the State Track and Field Championships. 400-meter race, winning time 53:24 was her winning time. Clara Adams, she's a sophomore in California. However, her celebration involving a fire extinguisher led to her disqualification. Clara's father, who also happens to be her coach, told her that she was on fire after the race and encouraged her to celebrate by allowing her to allowing him to spray her shoes with a fire retardant foam from a fire extinguisher. The crowd loved it, but officials deemed it unsportsmanlike conduct and disqualified her after the race, awarding the title to another athlete. Clara was also barred from participating in the 200-meter race that she was set to take part in. But she was barred. She wasn't even allowed to compete. I am disappointed and I feel robbed, she said. They took my moment away from me. And I worked so hard for that title. Clara's dad added that she wasn't on the track when she set off the fire extinguisher and that the opponents were nowhere around. It didn't mean any disrespect. Public sentiment has largely supported Clara. Nearly 90% of respondents to stories online about this situation disagree with her disqualification, but the California High School Association, Athletic Association, is standing by the ruling, apparently. So, wow. That's rough. I mean, I can understand. Yeah, it's a little over the top, but... And finally, here in the broken news this morning, the odd and unusual side of the headlines, they have driverless cars now in a number of cities, I think a couple of cities in Texas. And in California, in San Francisco, the driverless cars are now showing human-like behaviors. The driverless cars... are the computers that are driving the driverless cars are becoming impatient, like human drivers. Impatience, basically they say it indicates increased intelligence in the robo-taxis. University of San Francisco engineering professor William Riggs observed a self-driving Waymo car creeping forward at an intersection as pedestrians were in the crosswalk. And the car was becoming impatient, kind of creeping forward, ready to go. Basically, passive aggressiveness toward the pedestrians. And hurry up, get over there, I need places to go. The behavior, this particular behavior, has not previously been seen in robotic cars and indicates that they are learning behaviors to mimic human drivers. Waymo, for their part, when they were asked about this, they kind of dismissed it and actually tried to spin it as a good thing. Waymo says they are aiming for assertiveness in order to blend into the environment and be more predictable. So, in other words, if the self-driving cars are too good, are too safe, then people won't know how to react because they need them to be more human-like so that they don't disrupt traffic. That's just a weird justification if you really think about it. That if they are too good, then that would not be a good thing, as that twisted sort of logic. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
The Riverside Civic Concert Series means great music each Wednesday night. Along with the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts, WFIN is proud to emcee another season of concerts at the Bandshell at Riverside Park. The season opener next Wednesday, June 11th, with the Finley Civic Concert Band. Concerts are at 7 p.m., then Sunday morning at 11. We air that week's concert courtesy of Coldwell Banker Flag City. Join us on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com. And 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This is a case study in perception versus reality, or in this case, perhaps perception becoming reality. We are not in a recession. We are not in an economic freefall in this country. Far from it. And yet, so a lot of people seem to be acting like we are, given some of the uncertainty that certainly does exist right now. Recent research indicates that 77% of Americans are altering their financial management practices due to current economic conditions. 77% of Americans are altering their financial management practices. 86% say they feel uncertain about the economy, and 58% anticipate a recession. So individuals are prioritizing predictability and stability in their spending habits. The study was commissioned by a firm and conducted by Talker Research reveals that many are keeping cash on hand for unexpected expenses. Half of Americans say that they are keeping cash on hand for the unexpected. 41% are opting for fixed payments, and 36% focusing on long-term financial planning. Additionally, 39% of Americans are prioritizing strategies to avoid credit card fees. Now, some of these things are probably good things to do regardless of the condition of the economy, but it's certainly a case where all of the uncertainty has gotten our attention and leading us to do some of the things that maybe we should have been doing all along. This shift toward financial control and clarity is reflected in consumer preferences for transparent terms, interest-free offers, and predictable payment options. So retailers, take note. Those are the things that people are looking for when weighing whether to make major purchases these days. Well, summer is here, and it doesn't get any better than taking in a baseball game on a beautiful summer day. Today, notwithstanding. The Flag City Sluggers, though, are opening their inaugural season this weekend. Joe Fenimore is with us on the line this morning. I understand that the players are all arriving in town. If they're not already here, they'll be here today. So this is really starting to get real.
Yeah, it's really getting real. The guys are coming in. Most of them are in town already. You'll see them out at the ballpark hitting some balls and hitting the batting cages. And it's neat because they're coming from all over the country. So they're their first time in Findlay, Ohio.
So talk a little bit about who the Sluggers are. What is this team all about?
So a lot of people know collegiate league ball. So these are prospect players or guys who are looking to continue their baseball career, hopefully at a minor league level, mm-hmm. but they also want to currently keep their collegiate eligibility.
Okay.
So they play their 50-something games in college, and then in the summer they go to the collegiate leagues. And we're in the Great Lakes Collegiate League.
And so these are not players that have contracts. They're trying to get their name out, continue to work on their skills and hopefully land in the minors at some point. And then from there, who knows?
That's correct. Some of them are drafted. They can be drafted. They're eligible. And then some aren't yet because of how many years they're in school. But okay. Yeah, they're all working on their skills. We have some strong D1 players from University of Central Florida, Marshall, and things like that, and they're all coming to Finley to play ball. And then the other teams, too, in the league, you're going to see a lot of talent. The Lima Locos are just down the street. They have some Notre Dame guys down there, some Louisville guys, so they'll okay. all be coming in and out of Finley this summer.
So talk about the process of bringing this team to Finley.
Yeah, this has been a long process, but it's been a very fun process, and it was definitely a grassroots process. I'm from Finley. I left Finley, and I lived in the Cincinnati area for years, and I was always a big Red Machine fan. I was also a Reds fan when I lived down there. But one thing I've always liked about it in any city I lived in after living in Finley was baseball always made me feel like a hometown person in that city. And what I mean by that is, you know, the day, the ball game atmosphere, events before and after the game, and just sitting with a friend at a ball. I mean, there's nothing like having a hot dog at a ball game, right? I mean, you just can't beat that. So me and my neighbor actually were sitting on the back porch about 2 years ago, and I pitched him an idea about how Finley used to have the Finley Sluggers back in the day, and how it would be neat to kind of bring something back to Finley, and we landed on a collegiate ball type of system.
And as you mentioned, the Lima Locos have been around for a number of years. What is the expectation and what are the goals for this team, especially in its inaugural season, to know if this is something that we can keep around for a while?
Yeah, I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we can control as much as we can on the field. I think the biggest thing for us, well, I know the biggest things for us, is we've taken a minor league approach with this team. And we are run by all university students who are business majors in sports business.
Okay.
And so yesterday on the field, we were going over all the game day promotions. I actually participated in a cup stacking competition. So we want to have entertainment fun. We have Joel Starkey coming every game. If you don't know who Joel is, he's a very talented young man who plays Oregon. And he is going to play, we call it the Joel Starkey Party Pad. An hour before the game, you could go to the False Cord Beer Garden we have and have a beer and listen to Joel play. And then during the game, we're going to have fun events. And then on the other side of the field, we have a kids zone where we'll have bounce houses. The Hancock County Library is going to have a mobile library out there. We got a Furry Tale is going to be some nights out there. So we're going to have a lot of neat events for the community.
So give us all of the information. Where are the games going to be played? Do we need tickets? What's the schedule? Kind of lay all of this out for us, all of the nuts and bolts of it.
Sure. So most of the games are at 7 o'clock starts. We do have some earlier games. They play at MLB schedule, so they're only off on Mondays.
Okay.
So they're either Tuesday through Sunday they're playing. The tickets just right at the door is $5. I mean, you just can't beat that price. We wanted to keep it low. We want people to come in the game and enjoy themselves. And then behind the park, there's some areas we left some windscreens. We just took them down. So if people don't want to come in and participate in the full game activities, they can sit back there for free. And okay. then, and, you know, it's the Marathon Diamonds. So we have some new stands that the City of Finley Rec Department bought and we helped put up. And so there's going to be plenty of seating there, but I'd also recommend bringing lawn chairs and a blanket, picnic blanket. There's grassy areas you can sit there and watch the games and bring your own lawn chair.
As we mentioned, this is opening weekend. You actually have the first game is scheduled for tomorrow, and then you play again Saturday.
Yep, we play the Michigan Monarchs, and then we go up to Michigan on Sunday. And opening or the first pitch and is for the game is at 7:05, and we'll have a ribbon cutting. I get the honor of throwing out the inaugural season first pitch, and then we'll also have a first pitch for that game tomorrow night, and then we'll get into competing. And I think just knowing the guys and already meeting them, I feel like they're going to gel very well. There's a lot of them know each other from a lot of them from the South, and they've played with each other in the leagues down there before coming to Findlay.
And I understand that you've got a website, you've got a Facebook. I was looking at the Facebook page, and already like 1,500 followers of the Facebook page. So clearly off to a good start. But you've got a website with swag and the whole nine yards on this.
Yeah, you go to www.flagcitiesfluggers.com, and you can check the schedules out. You can see the game day promotions. We're going to have first responder night. And then you can also get tickets, and the best thing, you can get swag. You can buy merch at the game, but we also have online, and there's other things you can buy online that you can't buy at the game.
All right. So
and that's all supports. It's a nonprofit organization. The board is not paid. Everybody who's out there on the field on game day, college students and interns are all doing this to bring this to Findlay.
And by the way, a huge shout out to all of the host families for these players, because I know that over the past several months you've been working to find housing for these players who are coming in, as you said, from all over. So big shout out to those who have opened their homes to help make this happen too.
Yeah, what a great! I actually have three guys staying at my house. So one thing that really warmed my heart the other day, I saw I have kids, and I'm up in the Van Buren area, and some of the Van Buren baseball players came over and picked up my pitcher out of Florida, and they went and did some reps out of the field, and that's what's about, like to see these high schoolers get to see these D1 players and interact, and you know, it's nice to see these folks in our community, because they're out, they're looking to eat at our restaurants. Their families are coming in town. They're looking to stay here and enjoy Findlay and what we have to offer.
So make it a point at some point this summer to get out and catch a Sluggers game. Again, opening day is tomorrow. Hopefully the weather cooperates for this weekend. And we've got a link on our webpage for more information about the Flag City Sluggers and everything that the team is about. Again, Joe Fenimore with us this morning. Joe, thanks very much for taking the time, and certainly best of luck for a successful season.
Yeah, go Sluggers.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, State Senator Rob McCauley offers an update on the progress of putting together their version of Ohio's next budget and the changes they are making to the version passed earlier by the House. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here tomorrow.